The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
It is going to be World Tuberculosis Day this Thursday, where the focus is going to be on raising public awareness of TB. And one would have thought that most of the public awareness of TB would be based on the assumption that it was a disease of the past and didn't really have much impact. The WHO says the absolute opposite. They've made a statement calling for action against it. We're joined by Anne-Marie McLaughlin, who is clinical lead in the Centre for Tuberculosis in St. James's Hospital. Anne-Marie, can you dispel that misassumption, first of all, that TB is a thing of the past?
Good afternoon, Anton, and thank you so much for inviting me on. Yes, we treat in Ireland about 300 cases of TB every year, so almost a new diagnosis every day. So it's certainly, there's a significant amount of TB about still.
My understanding, though, was that it was largely dealable with by antibiotics and therefore not a significant threat. Is that wrong?
No, it's absolutely correct. The important challenges, however, are the challenge of diagnosis and early diagnosis. And then about 50% of people who are diagnosed with TB in Ireland are foreign-born, and therefore there can be challenges around language. Then also the treatment. There are challenges around that. It can be associated with significant side effects. The treatment duration is with a minimum of 6 months. And so there can be, you know, side effects over that length of time and issues with compliance, perhaps. And then the big challenge about getting the microbiological evidence to make sure that we're treating the patients with the right medicines. So we're really fortunate here in St. James's because we have the Irish Mycobacterial Reference Laboratory on site, which is fantastic. So they do all of the diagnostics and essentially then give us the evidence to treat, but also the evidence to treat correctly using the correct medicines. And that way we can decrease causing resistance to TB, which is really, really essential.
Explain the resistance problem.
So most cases that we deal with here in Ireland are fully susceptible cases. So they're susceptible to the first-line drugs that have been available now for over 50 years. So rifampicin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide and ethambutol. The challenges come when we talk about drug resistance. And we have several drug resistant cases every year. So these require what we call second-line therapies and some newer drugs. So over the last 3 years, we're really lucky. The WHO has implemented some of the newer drugs for TB into their guidelines, and we use them.
So just to be clear, Amy, this is sort of the TB equivalent of an MRSA. This is a strain of TB that knows, I've seen this antibiotic before and it does nothing to me. The standard treatment will have no effect.
Absolutely. And the danger is that if we don't know about it, so if we were to treat somebody blindly, which we never really do, that we actually create resistance. Because these bugs need to be treated with a minimum of 4 different drugs. But if you don't know that they're resistant to one of those bugs, they very quickly become resistant to the rest. It's a really clever bug.
Does that mean that there's a prospect that TB could go back to being the endemic killer that it once was?
Not really. I mean, what we're dealing with is a very different population in terms of, you know, population tend to be overall healthier. And there are numerous drugs available and they all go through very rigorous trials. And all the time we're working on improving those trials and improving things like the number of medicines we need to give to a patient and the duration. So I don't think we're ever going to go back to a time of sort of totally drug-resistant TB, although there's always the potential. But through appropriate use of these newer drugs and the agents that have been available for 50 odd years ago, we can prevent the development of drug-resistant TB going forward.
Was it classically a disease of poverty? Was it linked to overcrowding and malnutrition?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you sort of go back to sort of 1930s, 1940s Ireland, it was very much a disease of overcrowding and poverty. And it's really from that time that we have this significant stigma, which is still associated with TB because it was something that, you know, tended not to occur in sort of wealthier houses, although in all reality it probably did. Nobody spoke about it. But, you know, the truth of it is that, you know, in the patients that I see, about 50% of my patients are Irish patients, who many of whom are on immunosuppressive medicines for other conditions, and they get TB secondary to being on that immunosuppressive medicine for example, inflammatory bowel disease or rheumatoid arthritis. And then they get TB on top of that. So that's a substantial portion of our patients at the moment.
When we're talking about the historical experience of TB, I remember seeing pictures from outside of a TB sanatorium where all of the rooms had doors that opened to the outside of the building. And in the middle of winter, the beds were pushed out and there was actually snow on the beds with patients still in them, because the supposition, I assume it was to do with ventilation. Was there a lot of quackery in the response to TB, or was there sense and method to those kind of approaches?
No, absolute sense. And, you know, it's important that going forward, we design our healthcare system around the diseases and the conditions that we're treating. And that's something to think about now when we're designing hospitals for the future, for the next COVID or whatever it is, epidemic. So certainly ventilation was very, very important. But the other thing is vitamin D. So we know that we even supplement our current patients with vitamin D, because that decreases the time towards what we call sputum conversion, or becoming less infectious. So vitamin D is part of our current treatment for TB, as it was in the 1940s and 50s.
Is it entirely a disease of the lung?
Not at all. No, Anton. Literally, I have seen many patients with TB meningitis, TB in their brain, and literally from head to toe, I've seen patients presenting with TB in the bones in their heels and everything in between. So it can affect the eye, it can affect the nasopharynx, affect the ear, and obviously the lungs is something that it's typically associated with. But many of our patients who come from Southeast Asia, it's affecting their lymph nodes, particularly around their necks, and it can affect the bones.
And just go back, you said the bones of their heel. Does that mean that the bacteria gets a foothold in the actual bone and begins to spread within it?
Yeah, this mycobacteria can affect any bone. So literally any bone, and often we see it in the spine. We call that Pott's disease. It can affect anywhere. It can affect the uterus. It can affect the bladder. We have cases of congenital TB where a pregnant mum has passed it to their baby because they've had it in their uterus. So, you know, these are well documented. Yeah.
The WHO is calling for a day to take action against TB. Obviously, there's one set of action, which is the acute response to a patient who presents with it. But from a public health perspective, what is it that needs to be done?
Well, really, you know, from a public health perspective, I think the biggest thing is reducing the stigma of TB. So most of my patients who have TB will never tell their families or their friends. Because of the associated stigma. It's outstanding that even, you know, in 2022, patients tell me, you know, I mentioned that I had TB and I didn't really see them again after that, which is really, really sad. So I think people need to understand TB is alive and well. It is not a disease of the poor. It is not a disease of developing countries. It is a disease that anybody can get, and just to be supportive around that. Because that would markedly reduce the challenges which as healthcare workers we find where, you know, we have to really, you know, counsel patients through, provide a lot of psychological support in order to get them through the medicines and the side effects of the medicines. So really it's about reducing the stigma of TB in the public realm, and to be very aware that it can happen to anybody.
We have the oddest legacy of stigma around diseases that where there is no logical reason for them to be stigmatized. I mean, similarly with epilepsy, there was a period in Irish history where if people were epileptic, they never told anybody because there was a shame associated for no obvious reason.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, TB was associated with being, you know, poverty, overcrowded areas. But, you know, the reality is, particularly now, where we have at least half my patients on immunosuppressive agents, you know, you're getting an entire cross-section of society. And it is really important that we start talking about it. in order for patients to feel more comfortable with it. Because for many patients, when you tell them that they have TB, you know, they're absolutely devastated. And I'm going, but, you know, this is something I can cure. You will be fine, you know. And this is something that we can cure quite easily and quickly.
An enviable position to be in amongst your medical colleagues, Anne Marie. Anne Marie, thank you very much for coming on. That's Anne Marie McLaughlin, who's clinical lead in the Centre for Tuberculosis in St. James's Hospital.
The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan, subscribe and drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.